helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well. Their father's health did slowly go by. And feed them on your dream, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, with your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. This program will give parents and educators the skills and methods to effectively advocate for children today. And now, here's Rich and Michelle.
Welcome to this week's Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. I'm Michelle Davis, and we're here with my co-host Rich Weinfeld. And our show is dedicated to exploring the issues in schools and around educating our children that can make a difference between what we are now and what we could be as a society. Rich and I believe that with high expectations and an education system that works, all children can achieve. This show is for parents, it's for educators, it's for children, and it's for anyone who has interest in not only our topics, but in the importance of education in general. Today's show is so exciting, and it's such a hot topic. We're talking about gender differences. And the title for today's show is Gender in Our Schools, Meeting the Needs of Our Sons and Daughters. Do boys and girls actually learn differently? And what strategies appeal to one group that might fall flat with the other? Is same-sex education a good thing, and how do lizards fit into the picture? I guess we'll hear about that later. Why are our boys no longer keeping up with their female peers, and what can we do to meet their special academic and behavioral needs? We're here with Terry New and David Sadker, national experts in this field. And Rich, why don't you introduce today's guests to our audience?
Hi, everybody, and it's my pleasure to introduce our two guests today. First of all, let me introduce the listeners to Dr. Terry New. Terry is currently Assistant Professor of Education at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Connecticut. He served as co-director of Project High Hopes, an educational research grant funded under the Javits legislation of 1993 to 96. Terry has done extensive work with gifted students with disabilities, modifying a classroom environment for these students, as well as developing a challenging duly differentiated curriculum. That's a phrase that Terry coined, duly differentiated, to meet these students' unique needs. Terry was a secondary science teacher and history teacher for 7 years, four of which were spent working with secondary gifted and talented students. And I know that Terry not only was a teacher, he was a football coach, and he drove the bus in the morning picking up the students. So maybe we'll hear a story from Terry about that. During that time, Terry's research interests include science instruction, teaching strategies for gifted students with disabilities, gifted with emotional and behavioral disorders, paleontology, bow hunting, and herpetology. Every spring, he leads a service learning delegation to Tierra Blanca, El Salvador, where undergraduate students live and work alongside the natives and villages in need of support. He is a board member, along with me, of Aegis, the Association for Educators of Gifted Underachieving Students, and he was my co-author, or maybe more accurately, I was his co-author on Helping Boys Succeed in School. So, Terry, howdy, and we're thrilled to have you with us today.
Hey, it's great to be here, Rich.
Let me introduce Dr. David Sadker. David is a professor, actually recently retired professor, from American University in Washington, D.C., where, along with his late wife, Myra Sadker, he gained a national reputation for work in confronting gender bias and sexual harassment. The Sadker's book, Failing at Fairness, How Our Schools Cheat Girls, was published by Touchstone Press in 1995. David co-edited Gender in the Classroom, Foundation Skills Methods and Strategies Across the Curriculum. He co-authored an introductory teacher education textbook, Teachers, Schools, and Society, which is a national bestseller. Dr. Sadker has directed more than a dozen federal education grants, authored 6 books, and more than 75 articles in journals such as Phi Delta Kappa, Harvard Educational Review, and Psychology Today. the Sadker's work has been reported in hundreds of newspapers and magazines, including USA Today, USA Weekend, Parade Magazine, Business Week, The Washington Post, London Times, New York Times, Times, and Newsweek. They appeared on local and national television shows such as Today Show, Good Morning America, Oprah Winfrey, Phil Donahue's show, twice on Dateline NBC with Jane Pauley. They've been honored with a variety of awards. David has received two honorary doctorates and was selected as torchbearer by the U.S. Olympic Committee in 2002.
Wow.
And I'm proud to say that my very first day of undergraduate education at American University, way back in 1973, my professor was David Sadker in his first day of teaching there. And I recently went to his retirement, so it was kind of completed full circle there. But David, we're very happy to have you with us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much both for being here. And Rich, before we get into some questions for our very distinguished and knowledgeable guest today, I'd like to mention to our listeners that you, being the co-author of Helping Boys Succeed in School, also have special knowledge about this. So I'm looking forward to hearing all of you, I will say males, be talking, you know, extensively about this, and I really look forward to hearing your expertise within the mix here, Rich, as well.
Okay.
Thank you so much. And before we begin, Rich, should I remind the listeners that they can certainly call or email us with questions and comments about the show today?
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you'd like to call in and you have a question or a comment for any of our guests about gender differences and educating differently with our topic today, your call-in number is 1-866-472-5792. And our email address is specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. We hope that you'll call in and email in and participate in our conversation today.
So David, after appearing on Today Show and Dateline and Oprah, now you've really made it. You're on Hot Topics in Education, Teach Your Children Well. So congratulations on that.
It's a strange culture, isn't it, Rich, where if you write books, you impress some people, but if you're on Oprah, you impress everybody.
Exactly. So, Dave, I want to start off by kind of getting a perspective on where we stand with the issue of educating our daughters, our girls, and our society. You and your late wife, Myra, began looking at issues in education of girls over two decades ago. And as you now work on your revisions to Failing at Fairness, in what ways has the education of girls improved during that time?
Well, you know, we've seen successes, haven't we? You know, not too long ago, medical schools had maybe 5% female students, law schools about the same. Colleges were dominated by guys, just as a few examples. Today, law schools and medical schools are almost half female, and colleges are more than half female. So we've seen progress, and some people confuse that progress with we've achieved equity. But let me give you some examples of what happens when you achieve progress. You see the next level of barriers. So for example, females who are in medicine, they soon discover that the salary gap in medicine is actually greater between males and females than it is in the general population. Women who go to law school, the gap between their salary and male lawyers is greater than the gender gap in the general population, a greater percentage. What we realize is there's a second level of bias, which is once you get your degree, you kind of face bias in your profession. Even in college, although we have more women in college now, we have a very segregated college system so that women dominate elementary education and nursing and healthcare and language arts. But men dominate computer science and engineering and physics. So we have a segregated system, and we have to begin addressing this next generation of bias that we're encountering now.
Dave, you focused in your answer on the biases, economic biases when people are in the workforce and some of the career choice biases or degree-seeking biases. Backing it up to kindergarten through 12th grade, are there areas that you see there where there's still inequity?
Yeah. I think teachers need to be educated, prepared in how to teach boys and girls equally. What the research shows is that teachers interact more with boys than girls, both in positive and negative ways. So boys get more praise, boys get more questions, and boys get more criticisms and more punishment than girls do. Girls learn to be quiet. Boys are encouraged to speak out and to act out. Girls have issues with self-esteem and feeling confident in themselves as they go through school. And I think boys take too many things for granted. There's a certain entitlement for boys, and maybe they don't have to work as hard. One study of boys, here we have them now leaving high school and going into college. As they leave high school, they feel that they are more capable than the average girl self-reports as capable. Yet they also report they read less, they study less, they take fewer notes. And as our stats show, they're more likely to drop out of college. So I think boys are hurt by an unrealistic perception of how their status as boys will carry them through life. So it works both ways.
Dave, I was as you started that answer, you know, you talked about we have to pay attention to both boys and girls, and I'd like to hear your answer to. I know one of the things that some of the folks who write in this area, either on behalf of boys' education or behalf of girls, it gets presented as a zero-sum game, that you know, if girls are making progress, then it means boys are suffering, or if boys are doing well, it means girls are suffering. And you know, I certainly, Terry and I believe that we have to pay attention to the issues of both boys and girls. How would you stand on that?
Yeah, you know, this is we have a productive way of phrasing and framing this and a destructive way. The destructive way is to say it's boys against girls. Remember the spelling bee in the third grade? Who's going to be the best, boys or girls?
Yes, the word I got out on is plateau.
Plateau. I think here's another way of looking at it. Boys experience life through one set of perceptions and experience and events. Girls have another set. A lot of that is socialized. They could share and learn from each other. That's, I think, where we lose the most. When we look at it as how boys learn best, how girls learn best, you know, in the end, every child is an individual. Not all boys want to be competitive. Some girls want to be competitive. Not all girls want to be compliant or quiet. Every kid has a different personality and different skills. How do we reach the kid? When we take a shortcut, like let's teach girls this way and let's teach boys that way, that's when we get into trouble because we deny the individual difference of kids. So it's not only, as you rightly put it, Rich, that it's not a zero-sum game. We're not taking one from another. It's also that each has so much to share with the other, and we could lose that as well.
We'll be. David, when we come back from the break, I'd like to ask you about, you know, what are these gross generalizations that we're making, or is there some literature and some actual data that we have to show the differences? And then we'll talk about same-sex education versus mixing it up a bit. We'll be right back after a break. Come back and join us for our gender differences show today.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. Rich Weinfeld, my co-host, and I are here with David Sadler and Terry New, our distinct...
Sadker, Michelle.
Sadker, thank you, and our distinguished guests on gender differences. And Dave, before we went to break, I was going to start to ask you, we say that girls do this better, boys do that better. There's some cases where girls might excel in an area that we might think of as a boy's strength and vice versa. And I'm looking here at a New York Times article that's entitled Teaching Boys and Girls Separately, March 2nd, 2008. And there's a model of that has separated boys and girls using everything from different colors in the classroom to different lighting to different temperatures. How real are the absolute differences between boys and girls, and how do we deal with the individuals that come at, with strengths that might be thought of in other areas for the other gender, if that makes sense?
Well, you know, this is such a basic question. We look for differences. That's how we look at it. People don't publish studies that show similarities. They have to show significant differences. But let me tell you about perhaps the biggest study done on males and females by Janet Hyde at the University of Wisconsin in 2005. She did a meta-analysis, which meant she looked at all the solid research that reported gender differences or looked at gender differences. Overwhelmingly, she discovered that males and females are far more alike than different. The differences are very minor, and really not all that relevant. I mean, they're quite small. And that's a look at the whole field. That's what she did. So we tend to, through socialization, perception, reinforcement, check out these differences and reinforce. Just go to walk through Toys R Us and walk through the pink aisles and the blue aisles. And those lessons start at such a young age. Try to dress a boy baby, a two-month-old baby, in a pink outfit and see what happens. I mean, they've done studies of how people treat babies dressed in pink outfits versus blue outfits. And when they're in blue outfits, they're much more likely to throw them in the air, to jiggle them. And when they're in pink outfits, they're much more likely to coo and cuddle them and hug them. And they, in that particular study, they actually switched the gender of the baby. So it didn't matter if the baby was male or female. Mm-hmm. It was the color signal that made the difference. So we really work very hard in this culture to separate males and females and to treat them quite differently. So that's number one. Number two, a lot of things that get impacted by this, including brain development. So if you play with Legos and Tinker Toys and Erector Sets and spatial games as a boy, that builds your spatial ability. And your spatial ability is what's related to engineering. If girls do not play with those kinds of toys, they never develop those facilities, or they let them go underdeveloped, which means they're not great at spatial abilities. And I know you both have a background in special needs kids. When we define special needs kids, we define things like learning disabilities. But we don't define things, correct me if I'm wrong, like spatial visualization. Do we have programs that target kids who are spatially challenged?
That's right. I think they are really subject-based more so.
So the girls, you know, who have these needs aren't identified in the special needs population. And so we still have the overwhelming number of engineers as males. So what I'm saying is socialization is powerful. Research says the differences are quite minimal and quite small. And I know there are people out there who talk about different brains, the left brain and right brain. But the truth is the brain is a muscle. We've done that to the brain when we train one side instead of another. You know, when I grew up, I heard that 90% of your brain isn't used. And I was like, gee, if I could just click in another 5%, I could be a genius here.
Dave, I'm going to jump in and, you know, just get Terry into this discussion, but just start by saying in our book, Helping Boys Succeed in School, we start off by talking about the environment where we agree with you completely, how the environment shapes kids. We do also feel like it is biology as well, that there are some differences. Maybe they're subtle, you know, maybe they're overgeneralized, but there are some differences. And I think one of the differences that I've been interested in, I've seen more and more studies on, are more areas in the brain that are involved with language in girls, more relationship between language and emotions. And Terry, let me ask you, accounting for the fact that we have lots of individual differences among girls and among boys, what do you recommend in terms of trying to effectively educate both boys and girls?
Well, currently, Rich, differentiated instruction holds the best promise for meeting the needs of all of our students. You know, the work of Carol Ann Tomlinson, who has promoted that we change up, we diversify our teaching strategies so that we don't teach to just one segment of the class. We try different instructional methods, different processes, and allow students to choose different products to show their skills and the way they learn. Once again, dual differentiation, something I worked on for Project High Hopes, we had to take in consideration students' reading level, but at the same time, we wanted them to complete advanced science projects. So differentiation, you can alter the way you teach to a student who may be a second language learner, but at the same time, you're allowing them to produce a product to show what they really can do.
Terry, just to jump in, the way I kind of simplify what you're talking about on a very basic level is, you know, getting information doesn't have to be through reading, and demonstrating understanding doesn't have to be through writing. And the more of a menu of options we have for both gaining the information and demonstrating the information, the more different kinds of learners, whether they're boys or girls, we're going to touch. And I just think that's just such an important thing to communicate.
That's an excellent summary. And, once again, if we look at the work of Dr. Howard Gardner in multiple intelligences, you know, if we're looking at 9 different ways that we can exhibit our strengths, and it's different combinations of these, Yeah, we can teach. I think David was exactly right. We can teach spatial ability in the classroom. And we can teach it in mathematics. I have a colleague whose expertise is teaching geometry through origami. That's Rachel McAnellan.
Right.
You know, she is teaching the visual spatial perspective in mathematics. And she's going through a differentiated instructional approach using multiple intelligences. But when she's able to differentiate her instruction, it benefits both the special needs student, the gifted student, the male student, and the female student. And differentiation gives you a toolbox to explore different teaching avenues. So,
Terry and Dave, I view the two of you, obviously, you're our expert guests today, and then Rich, I think, is an expert in the mix, and I'm kind of really learning about the depths of this controversy, which is there a girl crisis or is there a boy crisis? I think there's been a lot of talk about that, and while the way I'm framing the question does set up that, you know, we could be for boy education or we could be for girl education, but what is each of your view on this discussion topic? David, why don't you go ahead and take us first?
Well, the education sector last year and the American Association of University of Women last month issued reports on the, quote, boy crisis. And what they talked about is how it has been basically used as a political weapon against feminists. When you look at test scores on national achievement tests, boys over the last 20 years trail girls, but their scores have actually increased. The gap has gotten smaller. If you look at American education over the last few centuries, boys have always had issues in school. So there's something going on with school and boys, whether it's the sedentary lifestyle, whether it's developmental issues where boys develop slower than girls. I'm sure we can come up with a number of hypotheses. But is this a crisis? No, it's not a crisis. It's not a crisis because boys are doing better now than they have before. If there are, as a group, if there are boys in crisis, it's boys of color and boys who are poor. And they have always been in crisis.
Absolutely.
So that's my take on it.
And Terry?
I understand. I read the report that Dave's talking about, and I agree. You know, our educational system has a format that is very comfortable for some educators, and we find it does not reach all of our students. In my work in Connecticut and New England, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New York, we're finding that there is a problem with our boys. They're not completing school at the same rate. They're dropping out of college earlier. Is it a crisis? No. I think it's an area of concern that we need to be looking at why so many talented young men are not completing for their academic study. I think David did hit a lot of the good issues. When you look at the numbers, our bilingual students are not completing, and I know this affects the statistics for boys.
Absolutely,
so,
absolutely.
As well as our special needs kids.
Oh, that's absolutely the case. Can you talk? Can each of you talk a little bit? We've got a couple of minutes until our next break. Could each, or just a minute or so? I'd like to talk about the education for teachers and what it takes. What do I, as an educator, need? Because we know that most educators are female. What do I need to understand about boys, and what do I, as an educator, then further need to understand about girls? Understanding that we probably won't get to complete this question, but let's go ahead and start. David, what do teachers actually need to understand this issue better?
I think equity has to be a part of teacher training. Am I pulling in that quiet student, boy or girl? Am I letting one student dominate the class, boy or girl? am I asking probing and interesting and challenging questions to both boys and girls, and am I giving them time to speak in class? So I think teachers, before you even deal with understanding gender or race or ethnicity, I think they have to establish a sense of fairness, and that becomes a lesson for the other students in the class.
Dave, when we come back from break, I'd like to pick up on that and then also hear from Terry, because you talk about an EQ, not an IQ, but an EQ, an equity quotient. There's even a quiz that you have on your website. So we'll come back from break and continue our discussion about gender differences in education. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, where we're talking with David Sadker and Terry New, our distinguished guests on gender differences. And Dave, you were in the middle of telling us what you believe teachers need in order to fully and better understand this equity issue that you've been talking about.
And, you know, equity and effectiveness is the same research. That's the irony here. For example, there's a phenomenon called wait time. How long do teachers wait for a student after asking a challenging question? And I don't know if you know how long that time typically is.
Tell us.
You want to guess?
I'm going to say the typical wait time is probably about a second.
Yes, 9/10 of a second.
9/10 of a second.
A little bit under a second. A little bit more for a white male. A little bit less for female or minority students, but as you can see, it's a fraction of a second.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's bad teaching.
Yes.
If we could get teachers to wait 3 to 5 seconds, then wonderful things happen in the classroom. Quiet girls get to talk more. Students for whom English is a second language get an opportunity to understand it a little bit better. Poor performing students, boys or girls, who don't have the self-confidence they need, get a little extra time to think about it. So that's good teaching, and that's equity. And much of what the research is on, quote, gender equity, is really research on good teaching.
Got it. That's extraordinarily important. So what I hear you saying in that is that the, quote, training for equity or gender differences is really about good teacher training in general.
Including everybody in the discussion, being fair in your responses, being fair in how long you give people to talk.
Very good. And your EQ, equity quotient, you know, how smart you are with equity, I suppose, is about fair counseling, materials, equal treatment in the classroom, course enrollment, and a real explicit policy against discrimination. Does that pretty much sum it up?
And a sense in the class that this, you know, this is not a secret plan for teachers. This ought to be explained to students. Everybody gets fair treatment, and that's one of the rules of this class.
Very nice. How about you, Terry? We're talking about the what do educators need in order to better understand or fully understand the issue of gender difference or equity?
Yeah, I think one thing that really concerns me is the National Science Teachers Association, NSTA, completed a study almost 15 years ago now. Their findings describe that teachers teach the way they were taught. So many of our classroom teachers do not have the training in equity. They don't have training in differentiation. And this is very difficult to turn around. I know among my graduate students in education right now, I'm seeing great improvements. I'm seeing individuals who want to teach in an equitable way. They want to give opportunities to both our guy students and our girl students. I know as a fact, my male students coming out with an elementary teaching degree have a better option of getting a job faster because elementary schools are looking for talented male teachers to be an influence in the elementary schools.
Terry, talking about teacher training and, you know, now our current situation is majority of teachers are females, what kind of guidance can you give to teachers to who may be looking at a boy's behavior and feeling like they just have to deal with a negative behavior? How can they look for possible strengths in that? And I know I've heard you tell a story that
sure
about the catapult that particularly illustrates this.
You know, education is very complex. And I received a phone call from Joe Renzulli a couple of years ago, and he'd asked me to go in and to work with a school with a young man who had thrown a chair at his sixth grade teacher. So my first reaction is, okay, I'm dealing with a very frustrated young man, and I want to find out what's going on. It turns out that this young man was highly gifted in mathematics. So when I was observing him one day, the teacher handed out a math worksheet. This young man completed it in 10 minutes. He walked around the room, picked up rubber bands, talked to friends, and when he turned in his math sheet to his teacher, he gave her a very devilish smile. Now, of course, his seat was as far away from the teacher's desk as possible. What this young man did is he took those scraps and made a handheld catapult. They had been studying medieval history. So while his peers are still working on their math homework sheet, or this ditto sheet, he had completed a handheld catapult that was powerful, it was accurate, and it was launching spit wads at a great distance. His teacher never saw that. As a matter of fact, 10 minutes after he turned in his paper, she used his paper, she used Tommy's paper, to grade the other students. Now, I'm saying, you know, what's going on here? Well, it turns out Tommy never missed a math problem. He was brilliant in visual spatial skills, but he did have some behavior problems. This teacher, all she needed was to look at Tommy differently. It turns out that when he threw the chair at her, they had got into a battle of wills because the teacher had done a math problem incorrectly, Tommy tried to be forceful, correct her. He was out of line. He should have never thrown the chair. But that was some insight the teacher missed. She couldn't understand that Tommy needed movement. She didn't understand that Tommy was very creative. And the happy ending to the story is, according to Tommy, he and his teacher signed a peace treaty. And the last 2 months of his sixth grade year were much more successful. Now, in part of the negotiations, I brought in the male assistant principal to be Tommy's math mentor. So to make a long story short, if this teacher had been more aware of his educational needs, how he needed movement, he expressed himself through drawings and art, through building, she could have reached him a lot quicker and more effectively. And I'm happy to announce that Tommy just graduated with an engineering degree from the University of Connecticut this May.
Excellent.
And hasn't thrown a chair at a teacher in quite a while now.
Very good. You know, Jerry, you just said the word mentoring, I believe, and I'd like to ask both you and Dave the question about, you know, how important are opportunities for mentoring and, you know, for boys and girls to be mentored? Is the fact that the majority of school teachers in the nation are female, does that automatically mean that girls have better or more role models? And can you talk about the importance of role models in the education of the different genders? Dave, why don't you go ahead and start us out?
Well, role models and mentoring are important. When you say, do girls have more mentors? Of course, more women are teachers. Well, maybe they have the mentor that women are teachers and women are secretaries and principals and superintendents are men.
Absolutely.
So it's that same model they see reflected in businesses and all around them. So what each group needs to see, I think, or what I would propose, is I think females need to see women engineers and women scientists and women athletes, which kind of is the idea behind, you know, Take Your Daughter to Work Day about a decade or so ago. What I think men need, and here some of you may agree with me and some of you may not, is all the pieces of their life that they're missing. Nurturing, how men could nurture, how about seeing a full-time dad? Would a school have kids, you know, bring in a mentor, a stay-at-home dad? Or is that too out of the box for a school? How about male artists and male musicians, which, you know, who are there, but usually not the focus of the curriculum? So that's kind of what I would do for mentoring. I would mentor the missing pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle, you know, Terry and I in our book talk about the boy code, which is something that introduced by William Pollack of Harvard, and where he talks about the lessons that we explicitly and I think unconsciously teach to our boys about what it means to be a male, and it's kind of a very narrow box to put boys in. And Terry, I know you've had some experiences, and you wrote about in the book about cracking the boy code, and this might be a good point to talk a little bit about that.
Sure, and let me lead him a comment on the mentoring piece. In most of the Javits grants that I've worked on, we've been very careful to find female biologists, female scientists to come in, because that's a powerful influence. You have a fourth grade girl who's struggling with science, and here comes a practicing woman scientist saying, okay, this is what I do for a living. You know, I study the Coqui frog in Puerto Rico and their habitat and their territoriality. On the flip side of that, the women do need those mentors, those role models. At Sacred Heart, we have a very advanced reading program in which our university students go in, they read in local inner-city school programs. Real men read. We take a lot of our university athletes volunteer. They go in, they read books to fourth and fifth grade boys.
Terry, we're going to pick back up on that topic, cracking the boy code, after break, and have some final questions for both you and Dr. David Satker. See you after the break.
Tell me the things you say.
that your elders grew.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Hi, this is Rich Weinfeld, co-host of Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, along with Michelle Davis, and we're speaking today with Dr. David Sadker and Dr. Terry New, examining the education of boys and girls. And Terry, when we went to break, you were in the middle of an answer talking about ways that we can do what we refer to in our book as crack the boy code. I'd like you to continue on that.
Well, like I said, you know, bringing university athletes into an elementary to do read-aloud programs, that's a powerful message. Here you have male role models from athletics, and they're reading. And the boys' code is such a subversive cultural influence that we can use mentors to teach boys it is okay to be nurturing. It's okay to express feelings. Two things that our culture really suppresses in our young men.
Absolutely.
Major concern for me right now is the boys' code is also telling a lot of our minority or at-risk students that being academic is not cool.
Yep.
And once again, we have to be in the school systems. We have to have positive male images and positive female teachers who know how to motivate and encourage our young men to succeed in school and tell them it is okay. A good thing to be successful.
I wanted to ask both of you about the impact of No Child Left Behind on the topic that we're talking about today. I have my biases, which I'm happy to share, but how has the focus on standards-based education, the heightened focus on performing and reading and writing throughout the day, how do you think that's affected both our girls and our boys who may learn differently? And I'll start with Dave.
I'm not a fan of No Child Left Behind. I think its focus on high-stakes testing is really not the same as a focus on education. And I know it's intended to do good work, but I don't think it's accomplishing that. I'm okay with testing. I'm okay with finding out how students are doing. I'm not okay with high-stakes testing, which says there are penalties for students, teachers, and schools if people aren't doing well. So I'm not a big fan. I also am struck by the incongruities between some of these tests. Like if you look at No Child Left Behind state tests or a national assessment test, girls tend to do better than boys in reading, boys better than girls in math. And then you look at the tests that matter in their personal lives, like the SATs and the GREs, and boys do better in both. And so the question is, why does girls' performance get weaker in tests like the SAT? And I don't think we have good answers for that yet.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, to continue on this theme, the emphasis on No Child Left Behind, do you think it's having a negative impact on being able to differentiate for our girls and for our boys?
You know, I think it's having a negative impact in just in the tone of a school and what the meaning of an education is. I think it's a distraction. I would love us to have classes that were integrated by race and class and gender, and strangely we're going in the opposite direction, where children learn about each other's experiences and grow to appreciate each other's different lives, and maybe even teach each other pieces. And I think No Child Left Behind just takes us away from the personal side of education, away from cultural and gender issues, away from social justice issues, and puts us instead back 100 years to where we were when we thought an education meant what can you memorize for a test.
Yeah, I want to explore the integration versus segregation issue a little bit more. But before I do that, Terry, any additional thoughts about No Child Left Behind and its impact on some?
Yeah, I think David put it eloquently. And what No Child Left Behind has done is created an environment in schools in which everything is focused on the test score. I think a recent study, many of you may be aware of the Reading First program, which is a literature program that was developed in sync with the goals of No Child Left Behind. The research shows that that reading program has increased time on reading, has increased reading instruction, but it's not effective.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is it's trying to influence test scores rather than to encourage learners to truly explore, enjoy, and be an active learner.
Yeah, Terry, I want to move to the integration of the genders versus segregation question, and I know this is a very hot topic about
sure.
should there be more separate classes, separate schools. You and I, as part of our work on our book, visited a public school in Frederick County, Maryland, Twin Ridges Elementary School, that had separate classes for boys for fourth and fifth grade. And I just, if you could tell a little bit about what we saw, and also just in general, I know that you and I both feel that boys and girls should go to schools in integrated environments, but is there a place for some segregation?
Well, I think the interesting thing we saw in Maryland was that they were providing reading materials that were of interest to boys, and the boys were succeeding in reading. The teachers were very aware that boys like movement, and so they would read for 45 minutes, and then they'd be able to go outside and run a lap around the building. They were very well aware that boys need hands-on, tactile, experiential science. And so there were terrariums around the classroom with the Anolis lizards in there.
There's the lizard.
There's how where the lizard comes in. I'm so glad we got to it.
How stimulating is that? And in this gender-specific classroom in Maryland, they were using differentiated instruction. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I know plenty of young women scientists who would love to have a lizard in their classroom as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is in this gender-specific classroom, they were differentiating, they were creating an environment that these boys were excelling in. And that's a good thing.
And I would add, besides reading about topics of their choice, there was also a lot of writing about
that is correct.
Action, gross, silly, and that was not discouraged, it was actually encouraged. Dave, I want to hear, I know in general where you stand about wanting to have integrated opportunities for genders and races. Is there any place for separation in the genders?
Well, as Terry was describing that class, I was wondering how many girls would like to be in that class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how many boys maybe weren't so comfortable in that class. Were they all equally comfortable? You know, there's no diagnosis or admissions test for that class. They just assumed all boys would like this, and I'm not sure that's accurate. I haven't reached a final conclusion on whether some activities could be single sex.
Mm-hmm.
I hold that door open. But I don't think the entrance should be genitalia. I think
that's a good point.
Can we say that?
No, I'm kidding.
when there are segregated programs, are there any studies that talk about how boys' programs should be taught exclusively by male staff and vice versa?
You know, the research on single-sex schools, despite the fact that single-sex education is catching on in public schools, is non-existent. I mean, it's very weak. A couple of studies show single-sex more effective. Some show co-ed more effective. There's more studies supporting the effectiveness of single-sex schooling with girls than with boys, something we don't consider. What if it works better with girls than boys?
Absolutely.
I'll put in a plug for our listeners to find the study called Raising Boys' Achievement from Cambridge University in June 2005. It's a multi-year study in Great Britain, and the results are mixed, but I think it gives us a lot of good instruction about some methodologies and interventions that do work. We have reached the end of our show way too quickly today, and we really appreciate the two of you, Dr. Satker and Dr. New, being on with us, and we could go on for hours with you. We really appreciate all the information you've shared and all the work you're doing in this field. Michelle?
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening, and to our distinguished guests, thank you so much. And please join us next week when we talk about the extraordinarily hot topic of the rise of autism within our education system and other pervasive developmental disorders here on Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's edition of Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. Join your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Teach your children well.